All right, Young and Naive, I think the last episode in Greece, we're in Athens, and who's my guest now?
Hi, my name is Yannis Palaiologos. I'm a reporter for Kathimerini newspaper, and I'm also a correspondent for Time magazine, and I've written a book about the Greek crisis in English called The 13th Labor of Hercules.
Cool. I mean, I've been talking to a lot of people, and they've all told us about the crisis.
Mm. What crisis? There's a crisis?
Apparently.
Oh my God!
Is it still going on for you?
Is it still going on? It is certainly still going on.
I heard Greece went back to the capital market.
Oh yes, that was a good moment. There's certainly been improvements in terms of the. The statistics of the economy, and the markets have grown more fond of Greece in the last few months after we achieved the primary surplus. Shall I explain what the primary surplus is?
Sure.
It means that the government, if you exclude interest payments on debt, is now taking in more revenue than it's paying out in expenditure.
Great.
Yes, yes, we were very happy about it.
So things are going well.
It means that, if you take into account the fact that in 2009 we were on a primary level, again without the interests, paying out 24 billion more than we were taking in, mm-hmm. And that the intervening period has been a period of recession where you don't get much revenue, it has been a great success. Having said that, the average Greek that you will meet will tell you that he hasn't seen any good come of that for him, because unemployment is still at 27%. Youth unemployment is even higher, a lot higher.
I mean, yeah, you can see the statistics on the street.
You can't. But unemployment is always what we call a lagging indicator, which means that once the numbers get better, unemployment will go down a few months or even a year and more after that. Mm-hmm. So we're still in that intervening period.
Mm-hmm. So. Back in my school days, I learned about Keynes, and when in a recession, the state has to invest and make more debt, and when there's a boom period, they have to save money. Was he wrong now that apparently Greece made it out of recession with austerity?
Well, let's put it this way. Greece didn't follow Keynes' advice, because Keynes' advice, as you said, was to try to fix the deficit when the economics times are good, mm-hmm. and we didn't do that. We had very high deficits even when growth in Greece was 3%, 4%, and 5% during the previous decade. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, when things got tough and people were no longer consuming as much as they were, the state couldn't do a stimulus program like Keynes said, because the state was broke. Now, since then, I wouldn't really say that austerity brought us to growth, because it can be argued that the harshness of the austerity program made the recession a lot longer than it needed to be. But it's definitely the case that Greece in the fall of 2009, beginning of 2010, had no other option really. It could only do austerity because it was broke. Its financing needs were huge. And the official creditors, the other European countries, the IMF, etc., were only willing to cover part of that expense, and were only willing to cover it so long as Greece did austerity and did structural reform, mm-hmm. and so on and so forth. And many things went wrong after that, but enough things went right for us to be now hopeful that the recovery is beginning. Only beginning. Mm-hmm.
So I talked to a lot of people in the social clinic and unemployed mm-hmm. people. So there's a lot of unemployment. Mm-hmm. People lose their health care, almost like 3.5 million don't have any health care. So are they going to get that back at some point?
Well, you have to understand that the way the welfare system worked in Greece, even before the crisis, was very problematic. What does that mean? That means that it tended to be geared towards powerful interest groups. So, for example, the pension system was notorious for giving very good pensions and early pensions to certain categories of employees, and much worse pensions after a lot more work for other categories.
Really?
So one of the things that's been happening since 2010, I mean, you've obviously had a cascade of cuts in pensions. I think it's 13 pensions have been cut 13 times now for different categories. But what's also been happening is that it's been made more egalitarian. So all employees, to an increasing extent, have to get to retire on equal terms, mm-hmm. which wasn't the case before at all. Now, in terms of healthcare, in Greece before 2009, you didn't really find a person being unable to pay his health bills. But that wasn't because the healthcare system was so good. It was because you had sort of extended informal family networks, because the family is still very strong here. Mm-hmm. So if a person lost a job and didn't have his own insurance coverage, he could get it through a family member and so on and so forth. What's happened since 2009 is that the formal system has suffered a lot because of the cuts, but also the informal networks have suffered a lot because the family budgets have gone down precipitously. And that means that it's a lot harder now for someone who loses a job to be able to get support from a family member. So it's the problem with healthcare is huge. It's going to take a long time to fix it. But even there, you have some cost cutting that's very important that's happening. And this will create funds that will be used in the right direction.
I also heard there was a big problem with tax evasion over the decades and last years. Mm. And I talked to the young New Democracy guy, and he was like, that's solved, that problem. Is that solved?
Is it? Really? Well, no, it's not solved. There's, you have to understand that before 2009, and that's one of the things that people who are against the bailout and against the memorandum always tend to ignore and not talk about. The tax administration in Greece was basically non-existent. You know, auditors could audit whoever they wanted. Politicians could order their political enemies to be audited or their political friends to be protected. You had an incredible sort of function of revenue with the electoral cycle. So whenever you had an election, revenue went down because they didn't send out the slips because they didn't want the voters to be upset. Huh. And there was wide-ranging sort of tax immunity. People, the government knew that people were evading tax, but in order not to upset them, especially during the crucial times of elections, it didn't go after it at all, even though in the last few years especially, it had the data to go after them. So what's happened in the last 4 years, and the Troika has been very strong on this actually, and very almost socialist about it, talking about going after the big wealthy tax evaders where the money is, mm-hmm. You've had the structure of a tax administration finally created for the first time.
Hooray.
There's an independent... Well, yes. If it's able to remain, you have an independent tax authority with a very good guy who's leading it, who is meant to be... He's not allowed to tell the finance minister who is being audited and who's not. You have information systems finally which are observing the auditing process so that there's much less scope for arbitrary behavior. Mm-hmm. And very slowly and with huge delay, you have the people who have lots of money and who felt free in earlier times to do with it as they pleased without the government ever seeing a penny. They're now beginning to feel a squeeze, and they're beginning to feel sort of cornered. So I think that's a huge big step. A very big question is whether this will survive the period of external surveillance, because it was very difficult for the law which created the independent authority to pass. The government resisted for a long time, and even after it passed, it tried to take away most of its competences. So this goes to the heart of the Greek problem. So if only this comes out from this whole period, mm-hmm. It's going to be a huge step forward. One tiny thing. Could we put the lap? I'm feeling a bit that it might fall down.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So I talked to a Syriza guy today, mm-hmm. one of the leading guys, and we talked about the Swedish tax model, where maybe you know that, where taxes are transparent. Everybody can see what everybody else is paying in taxes. And he was like, yeah, we would love that. Do you think that would ever be possible in Greece?
I don't know if it would be possible. I mean, it's interesting. In Greece, it used to be, before the crisis, it was almost impossible for the government to find out, for example, Suppose a guy, you know, is a doctor and he makes tons of money, but he only declares like 9,000 a year when the tax-free income is 10,000. Mm-hmm. And he's bought two or three houses, but he's got them registered with offshore companies. There was no way to check the offshore companies. And he's got lots of money in his bank account. It was impossible before the crisis to check the bank account. And it took a lot of effort and a lot of prodding, but that's happened now. And the upshot of the pressure is that now in Greece, it's a lot easier than in most other European countries to be able to check whether a guy who claims to be poor is actually rich. So it's a lot easier to check the bank account than it is in most other countries. It's getting easier to check other assets. So, I mean, in a sense, I would almost say it's becoming too easy, and it's only a good thing if the people who do the auditing become themselves more technocratic and less liable to corruption. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if the Swedish model, you know, for the Swedish model, you need the Swedish citizen who is as law-abiding as the Greek and the Swedish tax auditor who is as honest and much more honest than the Greek, probably.
How come the Greek is not as law-abiding?
The tax auditor.
Okay.
The tax auditor or the taxpayer?
Yeah, taxpayer.
Well, because, I mean, that goes...
Is it a cultural thing?
It has many roots. It has very deep roots. I mean, in Greece, you have to understand that since the beginning of the modern Greek state after the revolution against the Ottoman Empire in the 1820s, a European-style centralized state was never created here. You know, it was always powerful landlords who were powerful under the Ottomans became the powerful leaders, clan leaders of the Greek government. And in a sense, since then, obviously we've made strides forward to a large extent thanks to the European Union as well. But it still remains the case that a Greek is much more affiliated and feels much greater allegiance to his family, to his local community, and almost never to the government. The government is always seen as something separate from him, which is trying to take from him, and he is trying to take from it. So he's trying to take from it a job, a lifetime job, or you know, a tax break or whatever, or a public contract to build something. And he sees it sort of as his sacred duty to try to keep all of his money away from it because, you know, they're all corrupt. So, but of course, if the government has no money
right.
to build roads and schools and hospitals, it's obvious that it's the state will be something that the person, the average taxpayer, will be very angry with.
Kind of sounds like the Greeks love the social welfare state or parts of it. On the other hand, they don't really want to support it.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the numbers, there's been a lot of discussion, especially on the right, about, you know, overspending by Greece. But if you look at the numbers, the percentage of GDP that was public expenditure in Greece was below European Union levels and only sort of reached European Union levels in the last 2-3 years before the crisis. The real divergence was in tax revenue. The tax revenue was much, much lower in Greece. So that points to what you're talking about. We wanted a European-caliber welfare state, but we didn't want to pay for it.
So now that the tax revenue is going up, why isn't the welfare system?
Well, I didn't say the revenue is going up yet. I'm saying finally we have a system for trying to get at the revenue. Getting at the revenue is slowly beginning to happen, but it will take a long time for it to really come. And it will only revenue is always very dependent on the state of the economy. So if you've had a recession for 6 years, which has cost you a quarter of your GDP, it's going to take a long time for the revenue as GDP increases again to rise. To hopefully it will be also because of catching tax evasion, but it will take some time for it to happen.
So our show is based in Berlin, and Berlin is has been broke for decades.
Oh, the city, you mean?
Yeah, the city. Mm-hmm. And but one of the good things about Berlin is the startup scene. Does Greece have a startup scene or Athens?
The Greek startup scene is starting up, and there's a
startup of startup.
Exactly, and it's very hopeful. You have people who are very well educated. Some have very good ideas, and it's sort of the kind of context that in which Greeks tend to thrive. You know, it's small businesses. You need to be very agile, outward looking. You have tons of Greeks who have very good engineering degrees here, and then many others have also gotten second and third degrees abroad. And you know, it's a lot easier for someone who starts a startup in Greece to find talent at not very high cost, so a lot lower cost for a talented software engineer in Athens versus Berlin, and obviously much, much less than California, for example. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of hunger and thirst for it now, because, I mean, for a long time in Greece, people wanted to be employed by the state, or otherwise, if not the state, get a sort of a long-term job for a big company. But big companies have been doing very badly and paying a lot worse. The state obviously is not hiring anyone for obvious reasons. So people have been turning to it. And we've already had a couple of very promising stories. Oh. And I believe we will have more.
So hunger and thirst is one thing, but were there any successful examples so far?
Well, there's a company called Workable. And they've built a very interesting piece of software which facilitates hiring, especially for small businesses which don't have an HR department. So they connect the profile of the person with their LinkedIn profile and make it a lot easier for a company that's hiring to look at the people, see who they've interviewed, see what's going on. And they just got a round of funding from Greylock Il, which is the subsidiary of Greylock, which is one of the biggest venture capital funds in the world, $1.5 million. There's a company called Splunk, which was bought out by a huge American company in the area of operations intelligence for mobile applications. So checking what goes wrong with mobile applications and fixing them. Mm-hmm. TaxiBeat, which is a digital app for hailing taxis, got a $4 million round, if I'm not mistaken, a couple of months ago to expand internationally. So, you know, we don't have a Facebook or a LinkedIn yet, but there's people doing things, and pretty quickly you're already seeing big international investors taking an interest. So I think, you know, this could be...
Like, besides private investors, are there like any European or state programs that support the startup scene?
Yes, I mean there you have to separate between two kinds of programs. You have there's a Jeremy program funded by the European Investment Fund, which is funding four venture capital funds. And the way that works is that they give European money, but the fund managers themselves have to find private money to complement that. Mm-hmm. And this has been working quite well because, you know, these guys, it's not just about their responsibility doesn't end with dispersing the money. They have to make sure that they give it to the right people. Otherwise, they're not going to get any return and they're going to lose the people's money. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, what's a bit more problematic, especially given Greece's history in this, is what happens with the structural fund money, which is given to the ministry and to municipalities, who are then supposed to give it out to support business innovation in a very general and nebulous sense. Hmm. And we'll see whether have the know-how now to disperse that money well, because certainly in the past, it hasn't been dispersed in the best possible way.
And, I mean, soon we're going to be back in Berlin. I mean, we talk to the German politicians a lot, especially those in the coalition, of Merkel's coalition. Hmm. What should we talk to them about? How they can maybe help either Greek government, the Greek people, or the Greek economy?
Well, I would say, I mean, the German government was.
Or should they stay out of it? Out of your business?
I don't think they should. I mean, it's given that we're all together in the Eurozone, we share a currency. Obviously, each country's business is the business of the other countries as well. And I think that's a good thing. I think that the mistake that the Merkel government has made from the beginning, and of course it's been very good for the chancellor electorally in Germany, but in a sense She's been demanding that all the adjustment that happens in order for the euro to work and in order for its design flaws to be fixed, that all that adjustment happened in the south. So you've had a lot of adjustment in Greece, very painful, a lot of adjustment in Portugal, a lot of adjustment in Spain and Italy, even in Ireland, which was better prepared, which is also in the periphery. They've gone through a lot of austerity. But you haven't seen much adjustment in the north. And there's lots of things the north can do different to help create a more stable eurozone. All it requires is that they have to take a more European point of view and a less strictly national one. And I think now that, you know, she's sort of fortified her position as the all-powerful chancellor with her third term, now is the time for her to take that extra step. I know she's a very cautious politician, mm-hmm. but now is the time for her to take that extra step and do the things that will solidify her reputation, not just as a very successful German politician, but as a great European politician.
I mean, one thing I learned before I came to Greece was if you have a currency, if you share a currency, you should also share political power, as in you need for yeah. currency to work, you need a political system mm-hmm. that controls it. And do you think that's going to be in sight for the next couple of years?
No. I mean, if you think about the United States, how long it took them to really solidify their union after the United States were formed, they had to go through a civil war, and it wasn't only until the 1960s, really, that, you know, with the end of segregation, that you had a truly United States. In Europe, we have much deeper sort of conflicting histories, different languages, so lots more divides us than divided the United States. So it's a project that will take a very long time. But there are things that can happen in the shorter term which can create better governance and make sure that no one, you know, goes off the rails and threatens the whole project the way Greece did in the last years of the previous decade. But that, as I said before, that also takes adjustment on the part of the North as well, and a sense that, you know, we have to, when we decide on our policies, we don't think only of the German self-interest, but of the wider European self-interest.
So you're saying the recipes, the German government has proposed, they're not taking the same? Like, we say, well, do it this way, but we ourselves don't do it.
Right. I mean, the justified part of the anger, I think, in Greece towards Germany is exactly this, that they feel that they've been asked to do huge amounts in a very painful way, while Germany hasn't done what it could do to make the pain less or to facilitate the recovery after. We're talking about inflation policy, wage policy, the banking union, which was undermined by Germany almost from day one. You know, there's a lot that Germany could have done, and I understand. Initially, when you have very low credibility like we did after, you know, we told them that the deficit was 6 and the deficit was actually 16, that's a problem. But I think in Greece, but also in Portugal and the other countries, we've demonstrated that we're willing to go through a lot in order to keep the euro together. And I think what now we've proved to Germany and the Netherlands and Finland that, you know, we're willing to change. And now it's their turn to give that extra piece of solidarity that will really strengthen the euro for the future.
So would one kind of solidarity be, because I always hear, I mean, we are the world champion in exporting. Mm. Should we try to become a little more an importer, like maybe import more? So
well, I think if you phrase it like that, the obvious answer is no. But there are things that... like when I talked about wage policy, that's the kind of thing that I was alluding to, that if you give better wages to Germans, first of all, I don't think that will necessarily undermine it as an export country, because your success as an export country is not only based on low costs, and not even predominantly on low costs. But it will mean that, you know, the German consumer will have more money in his pocket, and if we are more successful in becoming an export economy, then maybe he will buy more Greek goods.
And one last thing, you said there's no way inside that there's going to be a political system that could control the euro. Maybe until then, maybe we should get rid of the euro, or maybe some countries should step out of it and wait until the system is there.
Maybe we should have started it later, but once we've started, you can't really go back. The cost will be devastating, not only for Greece, but also, I mean, there were various reports done about this, about how huge the cost would be for Germany as well. And it will be a huge step back, not just financially, I think, for Europe. It will be, you know, it will be the first serious step back for the European project as a whole. And if you start stepping back, who knows where you can end up politically as well and geopolitically.
And there are the right populists in Germany who say, well, maybe just Germany should get out of the euro.
Yeah, yeah. Alternative für
Deutschland.
Yes, yes. Well, I mean, you have, comparatively with other countries, I mean, even other countries in the north, you have quite mild populists.
What?
They're quite mild populists. Oh. They're not as crazy as you know, Herd Wilders or...
Maybe they hide their fascist attitudes a little better.
Yeah, but you probably know better. But, you know, it's an obvious argument that people... I mean, you know, people in the south are angry because they're forced to undergo austerity. People in the north are angry because they're forced to pay for supposedly, you know, layabout, lazy, corrupt Greeks and Italians. You know, if you want to go for the national stereotype, you can easily go in that direction, but that doesn't help Europe. And I don't think it helps Germany at all either, because, you know, as Kissinger said, Germany is too small for the world, but too big for Europe. But the first part of that is that she's too small for the world. So Germany alone, in a fragmented Europe, will not be able to punch above its weight internationally. And that's bad for Germany.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.